Welcome to the Illuminated Word Podcast. In this podcast, we take a reading from Scripture each day. We look at the background material to that passage and also application for us. Once again, welcome to the Illuminated Word Podcast.
Welcome back to the Illuminated Word Podcast. I am David McLean, and our reading today will come from 2 Samuel chapter 15. But before we read that, I want to do just a little recap. Up to this point, we've seen that Absalom had his brother Amnon killed because of the horrific violation of their sister. And then he goes on the run because of his father's, King David, his reaction. And for 3 years he hid, until we read in chapter 14, we see that Joab, knowing that David's, quote, mind was always on Absalom, he comes up with a plan to get Absalom back home. And in the story of David, Absalom gets a lot of attention in chapters 13 through 19, but why? Well, his revenge against Amnon and his rebellion against David is the beginning of the decline of David's kingdom that was prophesied in chapter 12. You see, this vicious cycle of lust and murder began with David's choices with Bathsheba. And Absalom was getting revenge for the rape of his sister, which, as Chris pointed out yesterday, never ends well for people. And he was also getting rid of the firstborn son, who was next in line to be king. And see, he had a clear goal, and he was doing everything in his power to achieve it, which is what we see in our reading today, the first 12 verses of 2 Samuel 15. It reads, "After this, Absalom got himself a chariot, horses, and 50 men to run before him. He would get up early and stand beside the road leading to the city gate. Whenever anyone had a grievance to bring before the king for settlement, Absalom called out to him and asked, 'What city are you from?' If he replied, 'Your servant is from one of the tribes of Israel,' Absalom said to him, 'Look, your claims are good and right, but the king does not have anyone to listen to you.' He added, 'If only someone would appoint me judge in the land, then anyone who had a grievance or dispute could come to me, and I would make sure he received justice.' When a person approached to bow down to him, Absalom reached out his hand and took hold of him and kissed him. Absalom did this to all the Israelites who came to the king for a settlement. So Absalom stole the hearts of the men of Israel. When 4 years had passed, Absalom said to the king, 'Please let me go to Hebron to fulfill a vow I made to the Lord. For your servant made a vow when I lived in Geshur of Aram, saying, "If the Lord really brings me back to Jerusalem, I will worship the Lord in Hebron." "Go in peace," the king said to him, and so he went to Hebron. Then Absalom sent messengers throughout the tribes of Israel with this message: "When you hear the sound of the ram's horn, you are to say, 'Absalom has become king in Hebron.'" 200 men from Jerusalem went with Absalom. They had been invited and were going innocently, for they knew nothing about the whole matter. And while he was offering the sacrifices, Absalom sent for David's advisor Ahithophel the Gilonite from his city of Gilo. So the conspiracy grew strong, and the people supporting Absalom continued to increase. So we really start to see Absalom's scheme taking shape. Absalom comes up with a great plan 2 years after returning from Geshur. He's going to win the hearts of the people, really especially those of power in Israel. And basically, he started playing politics, like placing himself near the city gate, which was like city hall and a shopping center combined. So you had local leaders meeting there for business or to conduct government affairs, and merchants would set up shop there since it was a hot spot for so many people. So Absalom had the perfect opportunity to win the hearts of both leaders and just the regular everyday people. Really, Absalom is mimicking David's rise to king here. Absalom is doing everything he can to ensure that he is the next king. He lied to win the hearts of people. Whereas you have David, who actually declined to become king at one point. If you remember when Samuel appointed David to be the next king, David was out in the fields tending to the sheep, and he was even overlooked by his father. Like, he was not even in the running to be king if you asked his son or asked his dad. But after he's appointed, we see in that interaction with Goliath that David is appointed king, and then he goes back to the fields with the sheep. So he's not trying to do a power grab. He's not trying to gain power and authority. And Absalom is the opposite of his dad here. You've got Absalom who's using pomp to win the people over. He makes a grand impression with his parades and his chariots. What's interesting is when Samuel warned the people of Israel years before about the dangers of having a king, he said that such a horrible king would have chariots and horsemen to run before his chariots. So this is something that was actually prophesied. And David didn't do this. David did not have chariots and people marching from him. He didn't have the pomp. He didn't have the big elaborate parades, at least in the beginning of his reign. So this was actually more than just pomp, more than just a good show. It was definitely a blatant attempt to dethrone his father. And then Absalom also threw out a lot of promises as well. I mean, he threw out promises that he had no intentions of fulfilling. Actually, promises that were impossible to fulfill. The people would come and he would say, "Hey, where are you from?" And they'd say, "Oh, I'm from the city of, you know, so-and-so, or the tribe of so-and-so," which had nothing to do with their complaint. He just wanted to know, were these people, was this person I'm talking to right now someone who's going to get me where I need to be? Are they actually Israelites? Do they belong to the tribe? He's really trying to fill out who they are so to determine whether or not he can use them or not. And he would tell them that their complaint was good and right. Hey, your complaint is, there's nothing wrong with your complaint. As a matter of fact, you are right, the other person is wrong, and I will make sure you get your justice. If I was judge, I would make sure you'd get your justice. Well, the problem with that is that you cannot promise everybody that you will get justice for them. You cannot tell everybody that their complaint is right and the other person is wrong, because eventually those two people will go against each other, and they cannot both be right. So he could not give justice to everybody. But that's not the point. The point is that he was making promises he had no intentions of ever fulfilling. He threw out all kinds of promises. He would tell them that their complaints are valid. And then he started planting the idea that they needed someone to hear all of their complaints, insinuating that David wasn't. It was a political move for him to gain power. Now, think to yourselves, do we see the same thing today? Absolutely. As long as I have watched them, as long as I have known anything about politics, I have watched politicians make empty promises, knowing they're not going to fulfill those. We watch people in power all the time make promises that they know they cannot fulfill or have no intention of fulfilling. And the sad thing about all of this is that it worked. You know, and he might have succeeded, but everyone was deceived. He did this for 4 years before he initiates the next step of his plan. And so you have him with his big parades and all this pomp. You have him making promises to everybody. You have him insinuating that the king is not doing a good job, which is also another move that you see in politics today. How many politicians, how many candidates come out and say that the current administration or the current governor or whatever position they're running for, how many of them come out and say, you know what, they're doing a great job. They're doing a fantastic job. I wouldn't change anything about it. They don't do that, because then if that person's doing such a great job, why do I need to elect you? But Absalom comes out and he makes promises, and then he starts kind of bad-mouthing the king and what the king was or was not doing. Then he initiates the next step of his plan. He needs to get away from Jerusalem to go to his hometown of Hebron, which was about 19 miles from Jerusalem. He claimed that he had struck a deal with God. He says that when he was in Geshur, he made a deal with God that if God would actually bring him back to Jerusalem, then he would go and worship and offer sacrifices to God. Interestingly, this is the last time we hear Absalom mention God at all. So he takes 200 men that the narrator points out, they are innocent. They have no idea what's going on. But he takes 200 men and he sets out for Hebron. He sends spies throughout all of Israel telling them his plan. He even recruited one of David's trusted advisors, Ahithophel, who is very likely Bathsheba's grandfather. And if he was her grandfather, it's not a stretch to think that David's treatment of his granddaughter had him or turned him against the king. And Absalom took full advantage of that. And so this sets the stage for a civil war between father and son. And when I read this story, I think, what does this mean for us? How does this apply to our lives? And my mind goes back to Luke chapter 20, to so many times when Jesus warns about making things look really good, making things look good on the outside, making sure that you're putting on a good show, and really that the attempts to look great are really just the pursuit of worldly greatness, of worldly power. You know, you've got that moment in Luke chapter 22 when they asked Jesus which one of them would be considered the greatest, and he responds with, "It must not be like that among you. On the contrary, whoever is greatest among you must become like the youngest, and whoever leads like the one serving. For who is greater, the one at the table or the one serving? Isn't it the one at the table? But I am among you as the one who serves." If we are so focused on making things look good, putting on that mask we talk about a lot, or even having the pomp in our lives, like look how great we are and look how great things are going, Jesus says that we must be like the one who serves, which is him, that we should be servants first and foremost. We should be the ones that are on hands and feet serving those in need. We should not be worried about making things look good to people, because we can look great all day long, but inside we could be just as dirty as possible. So he talks about those whitewashed tombs. You could be like whitewashed tombs. You look clean on the outside, but inside you're full of dead bones. And so we are called to be servants first and foremost, that in a kingdom you are no greater than the king, and in the kingdom of God we are no greater than the king, who he says himself, he is a servant. And the other thing is we have to make sure that we're not falling for someone else's pomp, for someone else's manipulation or schemes, but that we are looking at them and looking at what they are truly doing and not just what they're saying, that we judge them by their fruits, if you want to use that terminology, that we shouldn't fall for tricks or someone just trying to make things look good, but instead, you know, use godly wisdom to know someone, where someone is coming from, or to kind of see through that, because it is easy to fall for deception. It is easy to, well, it's just easy not to see what's going on in front of us. So strive to be a servant today. Strive to be that one that is not fighting for power, fighting for greatness, but laying that aside and saying, I am here to serve you. If there's anything you need, I am here for you. I will listen. I'm here to listen. I'm here to offer advice. I'm here if you need my coat. Whatever you need, I am here for you. I hope you have a blessed day. It has been a privilege to be able to bring this episode of the podcast to you. And I hope above all that we all seek to follow God and to be the people that God desires for us to be.